All right, next up we have McDowell versus Bracken et al.
May it please the court, my name is Stuart Guber. I represent the appellant, which was the plaintiff below. This case involves a shareholder derivative lawsuit. The court below dismissed at the pleading stage based on a failure to plead, demand futility, and dismissed the Section 14A claim for failure to state a claim. I'd like to discuss three things today. One, the standard of review. Two, demand futility, and how that relates to what our major challenge is in this case, and that is the CMA agreement. It's a management agreement. This is a beverage corporation. It's a public company. It's a big company. It's controlled by a controlling shareholder who acts as CEO, chairman of the board, and owns 73% of the outstanding shares of the company. He runs the company, his president of the company, and another board member is his son. The other three board members are old line business associates to go back at least 30 some years. On the standard of review under 11th Circuit law, on a dismissal of a shareholder derivative claim, on a motion to dismiss, it's an abuse of discretion, which is a very difficult hurdle at this point, since it was based solely on the pleadings. Other circuits have used a de novo review, and this is a motion to dismiss. The first, second, sixth, seventh all have a de novo review.
Let me interrupt you for just a second. I mean, the problem is we are bound by our prior precedent rule to follow what we have held in prior precedents. So even if we were to agree that perhaps abuse of discretion shouldn't be the standard of review, wouldn't you agree that under our prior precedent rule, we are bound by that standard?
Well, I would say that the other circuits are persuasive authority.
What is your answer to
the answer to the question is you're correct unless I can get an en banc review on that.
Okay.
Okay. If I get an en banc, if you folks determine that an en banc review is appropriate, then that can change the standard of review.
I have a practical question about the standard of review. Are you asking us to review factual conclusions of the district court or legal conclusions?
I think a legal and mixed questions of fact and law. And I will say this, that regardless of the standard of review, that we should win today anyway. So I'll make it easy. Okay. And the last thing I say about the standard of review is this is demand futility. It's really what we need to plead adequately is under Delaware law. It's a Delaware corporation. Delaware reviews this decision on a de novo review. That's what I point out also. With all that being said, however, on the demand futility issue, there's two issues here. This involves a decision each and every year for the last 30 years that the board decides to renew, or by being silent, renew this CMA management agreement. This management agreement is with the controlling shareholder. So it's subject to a little special scrutiny. So at the outset of this case, I want to define this management agreement. Lo and behold, nowhere is it publicly filed. I ended up having to call the Securities and Exchange Commission and do a FOIA request to get this agreement. That agreement is dated all the way back to 1990 or 1991. The agreement I got was slapped draft on it and was unexecuted by any party.
Is all this in your complaint?
Yes. The appellate, the appellee came to court with their agreement that they got from the SEC. The only difference was theirs didn't say draft on it, but it also was unexecuted. Now, it's this agreement that's the subject of this lawsuit. This agreement, one, for a company of this size and in this age, is stale. One, it contains an illegal standard of conduct provision permitting CMA off the hook unless it engages in intentional misconduct. That's not the law in Delaware. There's no exculpation for a management agreement. There's no exculpation for any officer. The only exculpation you get is for a director.
That's I think that's a common sense point, but do you have any cases finding that those types of clauses are illegal?
I'm sorry?
Cases? Do you have any cases that support your argument on that point?
Yeah, though there's law on the point. The Delaware statute only gives exculpation for directors. That's it. That's
does
the
it,
plain,
what I'm
plain
asking
words
is,
of
does
plain
it
words
bar
of the statute.
Does it bar, excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Does it bar exculpation for other parties?
Yes, there is case law in our brief. There definitely is case law in our brief. We argued this below. And the defense will agree that there's case law in our brief that indicates this. That's not the argument. And if that was standing alone, I wouldn't make a big deal of it because, of course, there's a provision in the agreement that says if something's illegal here or becomes illegal, it gets stricken from the agreement. That's not the main focus of what my argument is today. My argument is more about there's two other features, and one's really troublesome. One, there's an onerous termination clause of 1 year. This CMA agreement, they run this whole company. You would never, ever want people to run your company for a whole year that you terminated. So I believe that's unduly burdensome. The last thing's the most important thing. The representations of the compensation that CMA are entitled to are different in the agreement than what's represented in the proxy statements and publicly filed with the SEC. In the proxy statements, and here's the formula, that CMA gets 1% of all net sales for everything they do, including any strategic transactions they would engage in.
Can you help put this all in the context of the issue you're raising on appeal? As I understand it,
yes, I have to.
Everybody agrees that we have to do the abuse of discretion, right or wrong.
Right.
And I think you also agree that the pre-suit demand applies to both the Section 14 claims and your other claims. It applies to all claims. Is that correct?
The abuse of discretion?
No. The pre-suit demand to the board.
Yes. I would agree.
There's some confusion about that.
I would agree.
But I think you agreed in the district court and on appeal it applies to all crimes. So
yes.
Now we're just trying to decide whether the exception applies. Is
I
that
agree.
Where we are?
That's where we are.
Okay.
And
I just want to make sure where we are. So
okay.
Now
okay.
The exception applies. And tell me what the exception is and how you
okay.
fit
There's
into
two exceptions.
It. Okay.
One is the independence of the majority of the directors. Two, whether they engage in a valid exercise of their business judgment. And I think the answer to both those questions, and I only need to win one, is no. And why I went through the agreement is very important. And the last part is important.
I was just trying to say, so is what you're arguing about the terms of the CMA goes to what?
Goes to the valid exercise of business judgment. These directors have been there. In fact, two of the directors were there when the original agreement was signed all the way back in 1990.
I'm just playing devil's advocate. The company's been highly successful. They've all, why does that not say management's doing a good job and they keep reaffirming the agreement?
Well,
I mean, that may be too simplistic,
okay,
but I want to answer to it.
Look, plenty of companies have management to do good jobs. But you're in the 21st century and it needs to be governed in a certain way. If you are intentionally releasing false and misleading statements in SEC filings. I don't care how successful you are. That is a breach of fiduciary duty, and one day it's going to catch up with you when you're not doing so well. And that's the issue here. In the proxy statement, I'll tell you why abuse of discretion. In the proxy statement, it says they get 1% net sales for everything, including strategic transaction. In the agreement, it says 1% for net sales, but for strategic transactions, you get an additional fee that you can negotiate. Now, the public would never know this when they went to the proxy statement. That proxy statement's false and misleading. Now, whether there's causation on the proxy statement or not is a different issue, because disseminating materially false and misleading in SEC filings is simply a breach of fiduciary duty and indicates bad faith, especially from directors who have been doing it year after year after year and who have knowledge of what's in that agreement. We have a very small board, and that's what the difference is here than is in most normal cases.
I think I know the answer, but tell me why you just don't go make a pre-suit demand.
And then, well, I'm going to tell you exactly why.
I think it's because after that, it's harder to prove your claim if you actually make a pre-suit demand, because the business judgment rule comes into play. Tell me why you just didn't make a pre-suit demand than being up here before us.
Because I believe that the board was not independent. You have a very small board here. It's five people.
But you could have obviated the issue by making a pre-suit demand and say they just deny your claims. Then,
well, there's a much harder standard on a wrongful refusal claim than a demand futility claim.
Okay. That's what I thought the answer was.
That's the reason why. And candidly,
I thought that was it. Confirmed
candidly,
it for me.
Candidly, at this point, the lower court dismissed us with prejudice. Well, I understand the 14A9 claim. I get that. But on the demand issue, if you dismiss me and say you haven't met demand futility, then shouldn't I be given an opportunity to make that demand consistent with what the court ruled? The court dismissed me with prejudice. I want to talk about the board for just a minute. It's a small board. It's five members. Father and son controlling shareholders, 73%. You have three other board members. Mr. Stanley Sheridan, he's been a board member since 2009. He has a very long-standing relationship. He was employed by Faygo Beverage, owned by NBC. Promoted to president by the main defendant here, Mr. Caparella, controlling shareholder, in 1987, and served as president until his retirement in 2004. He waited the 5 years under the rules. You got to wait 5 years, and then you can get on the board and considered under NASDAQ rules independent. The other two board members are Samuel Hawthorne, who was on the NBC board from 1985 to 1993. He was there when the CMA agreement was signed. He was a member of Burnup and Sims, another company controlled by Mr. Caparella.
Mr. Goober, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're in your overtime, but if you'd like to
I have 47 seconds. Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
The other option would be you could go into your rebuttal time, but that's up to you.
Oh, that's okay. It can go into the rebuttal time. Okay, NBC, Samuel Hawthorne. He was with Burnup and Sims from 1981 to 1997. He returned to the NBC board in 1997. He's been there since, over 20 years. Chris Comley, lead director at Burnup and Sims for more than 20 years. He served on NBC's strategic planning committee since 1995. He's been a director since 2009. We've cited a couple cases where these type of relationships, small board, long, long time, not five, not 10, not just friends, business associates, close business associates. We cited In Re Freeport, Emerald Partners in the brief. I thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Amy Eldridge on behalf of appellees and defendants, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Lacey Gim, who also defended the case below. The primary question, as the court has already noted, that we're here today to discuss is whether the plaintiff below successfully invoked the very, very narrow exception to plead demand futility under Delaware law. He has not. And I'm going to address a couple of those quickly and then go to some of the points he made.
I've got a question before you get started. What's the law on whether the complaint would be dismissed with or without prejudice?
So the prejudice question is interesting because it ties into the analysis on the 14A claim. So as we covered in our briefs, and it gets a little tricky here, as the court's noted, that you have to plead demand futility to get past the initial threshold on a 14A claim for a proxy. So the district court below addressed demand futility. She also addressed the merits of the 14A claim for two reasons. One, and there's case law that we cited in the brief as precedent for doing so. The primary reason is because plaintiff continues to insist that one of the reasons that the directors were not independent and are disabled is because they face substantial liability on the 14A claim. So it was proper for the district court below to look at the merits of the 14A claim, because if there's no possibility of liability on that claim, then it's yet another reason that the directors were not, in fact, they lacked independence, right? So here, the district court looked at the 14A claim and looked at the merits, and plaintiff very briefly acknowledges but doesn't really address, there is no 14A claim here because there's no possible loss causation. The case law on that is very clear. If you look at Jabil Circuit, which is 11th Circuit precedent, you can't have causation on a proxy claim unless the material misstatement or omission relates directly to what was voted on. In this case, the proxies at issue were 2015, 16, and 17. The 2015 proxy has both an election of directors and an advisory say-on-pay vote. The 16 and 17 proxies are only for election of directors. Case law is clear that none of those things can establish causation on a proxy claim. And so although plaintiff talks about the CMA agreement and what he finds are issues with that, the CMA agreement wasn't at issue in the proxy. There was no solicitation for shareholder votes about the CMA agreement. There's no causation for a proxy claim. So that's why it was appropriate for the district court to assess the merits of that claim, and because it was fully pled, to dismiss it with prejudice. So that's there are two alternate bases for ruling on that particular claim. So then I'd like to go back to a couple of the other points. As the court knows, under Delaware law, the directors are presumed independent. And in this case, what plaintiff has pled, and even the discussions just momentarily highlight, is that he has pled that the directors have longstanding business relationships. That is simply clearly just not enough under Delaware law. And in fact, here, even in some cases where there are longstanding business relationships and you might have significant pleadings that discuss different things, the paragraphs on demand futility below don't even constitute a full page of the complaint, right? Three paragraphs. Pages are paragraphs 108, 109, and 110. They're not even an entire page, and they're only about the business relationships. The fact that several of these directors have been directors for companies, not enough. The case law on that, we can look at Stepak, we can look at Stervey Adams, or Stervey something else that starts with an A, it's not Adams. But you know, those just simply aren't enough. And the cases where the Delaware courts, even under a de novo review, right, where they have found that there was a disability of directors and they were not independent, those cases, including the very recent ones, they have all pled very specific personal relationships, long-standing personal relationships, things that look like family ties. We can go back even to Beam, the Martha Stewart case. And even that case teaches us that There are personal relationships that could be disabling. There were none pled there, right? That's sort of the first time we look at what a thin social circle friendship looks like, and you might have directors that have overlapping ties on boards. Were there business relationships? Clearly not enough. The cases where we see that the court says it is enough are very personal relationships, and they look, the recent ones, of course, have involved familial ties, longstanding, you know, first job through your entire career, and we're going to raise $500,000 to name an important community building after you. They're very, very different than the allegations we have here. I'd also point out that the directors here, opposing counsel noted that the director on whom he focused primarily was Director Sheridan, who was the CFO of Faygo Beverages prior to a merger in which it was acquired by National Beverage Corporation decades ago. And then he came on, stayed an executive at the post-merger, and then left when he retired and was gone for 5 years. Under the NASDAQ rules for independence of directors, all three of the independent directors here qualify, including Mr. Sheridan, and plaintiff pled no facts.
Although, in fairness, even if they qualify under the NASDAQ regulations, that's not a definitive answer for us.
Right. Both not definitive, although those regulations are in harmony with Delaware law. Right? So a finding where there is a difference between those two would insert some sort of disharmony between what the Delaware law looks at for independence and what the NASDAQ rules require. I'd also note that one of the cases that came up in the briefing and that we discussed, Sanchez, where the director was found to be not independent, Sanchez also not independent under the NASDAQ rules. So it is something that the Delaware courts continue to look at, although, as Your Honor notes, it's not dispositive. But here we have no facts at all even pled about why any director might not meet those standards. So the record's clear that they, you know, for the purposes of this case, there isn't anything to undermine that or to suggest that that's not in fact true. And then I wanted to cover quickly I think we already addressed the 14A claim and Jabil Circuit. I wanted to just highlight that there were claims that were waived below and not addressed sufficiently in the briefs here. So I think both the Caremark claim and the claim for corporate waste have been gone. So they're out now. And that I think we're also clear that the standard of review and that it's there. I think unless the court has other questions, I'm going to rest on the arguments of my brief and yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
A couple of very quick points. On the with or without prejudice, the 14A claim found no substantial liability. The no substantial liability finding is one under a demand futility analysis, again. Regardless of what the court determines to do with the 14A9 claim, we've pled other claims that were untouched by the court below. The breach of fiduciary duty claim that we have. That should be without prejudice. We should be able to make a demand on that board should you choose not to agree with our argument on the demand futility issue. Now, on abuse of discretion, I will say this. The court below got it all wrong on the agreement. The court below, and it's in the opinion, says that in the proxy statement, it says that CMA gets 1% of net sales plus an additional fee where it negotiates a substantial transaction. That's not true. That's what the agreement that no one else has seen says. That's my problem with this. Each and every time they issue a proxy statement, whether you challenge it as a proxy statement or just any other public statement made by the company in an SEC filing, it's materially false and misleading. One day, That majority shareholder can engage in a substantial transaction and say, hey, under my contract, yes, I get my 1%, but I want an additional fee now, too, under that provision. That's what I'm trying to prevent. And two, when you look at it, a substantial transaction based on the formula that they use for compensation, 1% of net sales, it's like a double dip. I buy a company, it adds $100 million in net sales. I not only got a fee for doing the transaction, I now get an additional 1% of the additional sales of this company. Nobody knows that. There's no executed agreement. It's 30 years old. So at the very least, I would respectfully request that even if the court upholds demand futility, that it at least reverse and remands, directs district court to dismiss without prejudice so we can make a demand on the board. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll be in recess.